Welcome to the Pregnancy Loss and Motherhood Podcast. My name is Valen Webb. I am your host. This is a space where grief healing and real motherhood collide. I'm a lost mom, a doula, and founder of Evelyn James & Company. This show is for the moms carrying invisible stories, the ones figuring out who they are now after loss in motherhood, in their relationships, in their bodies, in their dreams. Around here, we talk about grief, mental health, self-worth, marriage after loss, trusting yourself again, and building a life you actually want, not just one you survive. There's no pretending here, just truth, tools, and a whole lot of love. So take a breath. You're safe here. Let's get into it. Hey friends, today's guest is Melissa Crook, speaker, thought leader, and creator of the Embracing Layers Network and the Feel podcast. After years of striving for perfection and living for approval, Melissa experienced a breaking point that led her to reconnect with her emotions, redefine her worth, and help other women do the same. Through her Feel framework, Finding Empowerment, Embracing Layers, she helps women live unapologetically, set boundaries, and honor every layer of who they are. Let's dive in. Hey, Mama. Welcome back to another episode of the Pregnancy, Loss, and Motherhood podcast. This week, we have the honor of having our guest, Melissa, here. Hey, Melissa. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Valen, for having me. It's good to be with you.
So if you just want to like introduce yourself.
Yeah, my name's Melissa Crook. I'm a 56-year-old woman living in Fresno, California currently. I've got three grown daughters, a wonderful husband, and like many women, you know, have everything that on the script it looks like you're supposed to have to be happy. But also like many women, spent a lot of years taking care of everything and everybody else first and carrying around a lot of past traumas and baggage that I didn't process. And they came boiling over about 6 years ago. And so it forced me to really sit down with myself and be like, wait a minute, it's time for me. And really some nudging from my husband, like, it's time for you to prioritize you. Let's get serious about what's going on here and get to the bottom of these things that you just haven't dealt with, haven't processed, haven't prioritized. And so that began my journey. And through that journey and that healing process, I was able to create a framework that not only worked for me, but I knew could help other women as well. Whether you're in it, it's so multifaceted because in my own story, I have not had stillborn in my life, but I have had a miscarriage. And we had a close friend that we walked through that had a stillborn baby. And what it looks like, and I didn't even know until I started processing all of this a few years ago, 5-6 years ago now, that I'd never really grieved the miscarriage and that I carried a lot of shame about it. And that I blamed myself for it because it was a surprise pregnancy and it would have been our fourth one. And I was really shocked by it. And I just determined in my own head with my own mind working that I caused this to happen because of my lack of excitement, just these really kind of unhinged things and ways that we are hard on ourselves with these narratives and stories when we have these really difficult things happen. And so what I've been able to do is I started my own podcast in 2021 called the Feel Podcast. And I wanted women, I wanted us to start having conversations about the things that get in the way of us knowing our value, knowing we're worthy, knowing that we have choices within these hard things that happen to us of how we're going to respond to them, knowing that there are steps we can take and questions we can ask ourselves to make sure we are prioritizing our wellness, that we are not abandoning ourselves for the sake of everyone else, that we are not stuffing these hard emotions and putting judgment and shame around them, and giving ourselves the room to breathe and process, and surrounding ourselves with people and communities that are welcoming and want to support us in that as well. And so, I've been able to go on this incredible journey, meet amazing women like you, share your stories, and then be able to share my stories. I'm like, how can we show up for each other and support each other and give each other the space to be ourselves authentically, to feel the feelings without judgment, and to really embrace each other? But that really starts with embracing yourself first with a lot of grace and empathy. So I'm just very passionate about women knowing their value. I mentioned this earlier, and I really live by these three principles: as you are worth all of it, all the love, all the care, all the rest, all of the energy that you give to yourself, you are valuable because of who you are, not what you do, not your titles or your roles, but who you are as a human born into this world. And you get to choose. You get to choose alignment over approval. You get to choose truth over expectation, and you get to choose your own wholeness and well-being over performance. And those are the things that I really live by and that I want other women to know as well.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you so much for sharing all that. First of all, I want to say kudos to your husband for supporting you and being like, no, you need to do this. I know not everybody has a supportive husband.
Yes.
I do too. I do have a supportive husband. So I am very thankful for that. Like anything, I'm like, I need to do this. He's like, all right, let's do it. Or let's, you know, he's like part of the me.
Yeah.
Yes. Figure it out. How do we do it? Like, you know, what do we need? I love that. And then, of course, I am so sorry for your miscarriage because I just, when I know that, when I hear that people have three girls, I get this jealousy in me because I would have had three girls. You know, Evelyn would have been my third. Oh my God. Mm-hmm. My third little girl. Mm-hmm. And it was like a dream come true for me. So I could, I feel like knowing that you were going to have another baby, whether it was a boy or girl, but it was just like, you know, it's just one of those things. It's a baby. It's a baby.
Yeah.
It's a baby. It's a baby that you didn't get to be with. And yes, people often, you know, miscarriages are a bit more invisible, in the sense that one, the family doesn't always get to see the baby or hold the baby or do anything with the baby. Memory making, you know, like some parents don't even realize they're having a miscarriage and maybe flush the toilet, like all of these things. And then the emotions come later. You know, well, whereas this, you know, the family side, but also, public side, like people don't post pictures typically, you know, of their miscarried baby. And I hate that word. I'm sorry if that's like, it's stupid word. It's baby loss, right?
So
I'm sorry for that. It's devastating. And so, yeah, that was, is that one of the things that was sitting there for you? Like, would that, would you always come back to that?
It's one of the things. Yeah. I had two or three things that I had never processed, major things that I'd never faced. And there was, I came up in a very traumatic home. So there was a lot of emotional and mental abuse and volatility happening in my home.
Yeah.
And so there was sorting of the roots of that all out, but there were three specific events that I'd not processed, that I'd not given myself empathy, grace, that I had been very judgmental with myself about, that I had to replace curiosity instead of that judgment, and that I just had to mourn and grieve. And that was one of the three things, and I didn't realize it. And you mentioned, you know, that you don't know what's happening and you flush many times as you're passing. And that happened to me. And to this day, I can still, like, I had a dream later of like, oh, that's what was happening. That's what that was. I can still see that image. And I had to really go back and be like, you did not wish this on yourself. You did not do this to yourself. But then I also minimized it because, oh, I'm so lucky. I already have three healthy children. I have nothing to be sad about. I have nothing to be ungrateful for. I need to be so mindful of other women's experiences that don't have any children. And so we do that as women. We minimize these experiences and we compare them to other experiences. And loss is loss. And grief is grief. And your body, there's such a number happening to your body because it still goes through all these things that your body goes through when you've carried full term. So you still have this flush of emotions and things happening. But I really was like, get past it. The bleeding stopped. It's done. I did this. You know, I wish this upon myself and now we're moving on. And I never really, you know, it's just been the last couple of years that I've been able to be like, oh, that child, and I wasn't far enough along to even know whether it would have been a boy or a girl, but I do know, like, I every once in a while, I'm like, oh, that child would be 24 years old now. Like, I knew that child would be 2 years younger than my youngest daughter. That child would be 24 years now. Huh, I wonder what that would have been like. But I'm able to think about it in a way that's not just kind of contemplative and but not, but I don't carry any more shame or, and when I told my husband, when this all came out probably 3 or 4 years ago, when I first processed this and I brought it up to him, he's like, oh my gosh, honey, I had no idea. And I'm like, I didn't really either. I was just in such a hurry to get past it. And I didn't feel like there was room for me or that I had a right to feel anything because of this narrative I had told myself. And I think that's something that we have to remember with grief, whatever the grief is that you're dealing with. We have good friends that probably it's been, gosh, it's been 12, almost, it'll be 13 years ago in the spring, where they had a stillborn baby. No warning that that was coming. No idea that that was coming. And I remember them having a very like new process compared to what I'd seen 10 to 15 years earlier with other people I knew of how you were able to, you know, spend, you know, have some choices about seeing the baby, spending time with the baby, you know, and having those choices and being able to have these interactions. And I remember people, it was kind of new at the time. And I remember a lot of people having a lot of opinions about it. And I was, Brady and I, my husband and I were the first ones to speak up and say, this is none of your damn business. If this is what they need to do, then they get to do it. And you don't get to decide whether you think it's appropriate or right or okay or not. They get to decide that. And I think that's so important too, is if these, I'm so committed to like, do not put a timeline on someone's grief. Do not put a timeline on your own grief. And this idea that we will get over it, you don't get over it. You move forward. You learn how to live with it. But I mean, every year for them, every year they go to her, they have her buried at a cemetery close to their home. Their younger two kids that they had after that know about her. They go visit her. They honor her every year. And it's become this really, I don't know, tragically beautiful thing, you know, in the way they honor her. And I think it's, and also too, they were just really have allowed themselves, despite all the noise and people have grown through all the years to just, you know, oh, actually that makes a lot of sense. Oh, actually I see now why they did that. I'm like, good for you. Doesn't really matter. You didn't have, you shouldn't have, your only job is to show up and support and however they need that. And so I think I learned a lot from watching them walk that out too, and just learned a lot about the importance of giving people space to do what they need to do.
Absolutely. Yeah. Most people, I feel like most people mean well and but our meaning well isn't always what people need. And a lot of what families need is just for you to be there. They don't need words, really. They don't need you to, you know, you can't fix it. Like, you know, I've said it before, like you cannot bring their baby back. You can't. Nobody can. They're like, nothing can fix this. So we don't have to try to fix them. And it's funny because I don't, you know, actually, maybe I don't know because I haven't, the only time I've been to a funeral was for like my great grandma and I was like 6 years old. So I, you know, I just kind of remember it, but
yeah,
it was, it's very like what I remember is just different and people, I don't know, people like it's easier for people to grieve an adult than a baby. I guess is where, you know, because there's a body, there's a person here. And I think it may be different. I mean, our daughter, we cremated her. So, you know, and even John didn't get to hold her or see her. So I am the only one besides like my doula and my friend that was there and, you know, the nurse and the midwife that saw her. And so it's very hard for people to connect with something that's invisible to them. I don't know why that came up, but yeah, just thinking about that. And then something you said before when you were kind of talking about, when you were talking about embracing, what was it? Kind of about your childhood and then, childhood, a bit tumultuous, volatile, kind of like mine. So mine was mostly my mother. I had a very passive dad who just like let her be the tyrant. And so, yes, the emotional abuse and all of those other things made me a people pleaser for her so that things were calm, you know, as calm as it could be. Like her yelling all day is a good day, you know, or lightly yelling, whatever. But like that tendency, it's just like destroying little bits of ourselves to, you know, to keep the peace to, so I was just wondering like how, if you started processing this stuff, right? You said like you had a, I don't know if it was like an epiphany or just like everything came to a point, but like, is that kind of what happened to you or like, how did you start processing that and stop people pleasing if you were a people pleaser or how did you, you know, whatever it is that happened? I'm curious.
Yeah. I was very codependent and I didn't know the meaning of that word until I knew the meaning of that word. I was very codependent, very much managing the emotions of the room. I started being asked to be in charge of that. They didn't ever verbally state it. It was just understood. Like the, from the time I was 6 years old is about really when I remember there's a specific event that happened when I was 6 years old in the family, a huge loss, huge tragedy. And it was very much, I felt the pressure and expectation as the oldest granddaughter at, you know, the wily old age of six to make sure all the adults were okay. And that's in that that's the second of the third big things that I hadn't processed, events I hadn't processed that I met, ended up processing 2 to 3 years ago. I never, ever mourned that loss because I was so busy keeping everybody else around me very comfortable. But also that was kind of that first, you know, exposure to that. And then from there on, you know, always like making sure my brothers were being quiet and making sure that I was being as little of a problem in the room as I could be. So not to set off my mom or my dad. My mom was a screamer. My dad would go, 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 and then have an explosion. Go, 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 and then have an explosion. So always managing that. Okay, what's happening here? What can I do to manage this dynamic to make sure we just keep everything at level? So yes, that was just part of my environment. I thought that was normal.
I was started crazy?
By the time.
Like, oh,
I know.
You start seeing these body language or his like, he's starting to sweat or these things. And you're like, okay, we got to get dad under control. Hey, Jimmy, go like my little brother, go do this quiet. You're like, you know, like it's so weird how little children do this.
Yes. Sorry. Yes. And I started, you know, my room was kind of a safe haven for me. I would go in there and read and imagine I was elsewhere and just disassociated, just anywhere else that I could be in the way that I wanted to be with the people I wanted to be. I mean, I just thought I was just being a kid with an imagination at the time. I didn't know. It wasn't until I got into college with my first round of therapy where my therapist said to me, "You come from a very emotionally and mentally abusive background." The word abuse like rang in my ears like, what? I mean, I was so shocked because I was raised with the idea that there was physical abuse and sexual abuse. There was no discussion about any of these other kinds of things. And I kind of rolled out and through that, you know, started discovering that my dependency on relationships to, you know, and trying to keep everybody happy and needing them to fulfill me because I had been told in many different ways, non-verbally by action and sometimes verbally, that how I wasn't enough. It wasn't right. I was too, too outspoken. I was too selfish. I was too loud. I mean, I was never just okay as I was. So I got really good grades and I really excelled in the classroom, won a lot of awards, was the best track athlete in my school. One cross, you know, I was all the things I could excel at, I excelled at. Honor roll, all the things. And just because I knew that's where the affirmation and so that whole idea of value just because of who I was, I really had to find that on my own over time. Like I dabble in a little bit, find some space with it, and then think, oh, okay, I've got enough. And it was interesting because when I really dove in 6 years ago, my nervous system finally, I think, felt safe enough to kind of let it all open up. My three girls were grown, you know, two were at college, one was married and had finished college already. It was just my husband and I. And it was just finally, I found a therapist that I trusted and everything finally just started coming, boiling out. And I realized all that I had been carrying, all these wild narratives that I had been living with. But yeah, I had to really learn that most of my relationships were very codependent and what that meant, very trauma bond informed. Yeah. And that I had a lot of people pleasing that made me a great employee. It did not make me the greatest, you know, to myself. And also, you know, really as I mothered my three daughters, they learned a lot from seeing what I came from and how I evolved, but also where I was still stuck. And then they kind of took it to the next level. But I remember my oldest saying to me one time, she was home from college and she was going over a problem or something she was experiencing that was hard. And I go in and I'm ready to fix it. And she's like, Mom, I don't need you to fix it. I just need you to listen. You don't need to repair anything. I got this. I just needed to be heard. And wow. And then just kind of realizing, you know, that was kind of that first inclination of how I interacted in my relationships and the responsibility I put upon myself on those relationships to make sure everybody was happy wasn't healthy. And it was really costing me more than anything. Yeah. And so I really came to, you know, with this framework that I found worked for me and that I share and I'm so passionate about now, is it really, when you get down to it, is like, if your life is in any way is asking you to abandon yourself continually for the sake of everybody else, then something's got to shift. You were not meant to live that way. You were not meant to carry all these things. And one of the things that has a lot of stigma around it that we're not supposed to, like you can't stay in too long or that's not appropriate or you need to get over it. There are two key things that come up, especially with women. One is anger. Yeah. And the other one is grief. And everybody wants you to get over it. And everybody wants to put this bad stigma around it. I'm like, these are clues. And I'm very adamant about when I'm working with women, I'm like, I want you to write down your emotions each day. When I first start out, to just help them be aware of where they are. I want you to write them down. I want you to acknowledge them. This might take some time because you're not used to giving yourself this kind of attention. Yeah. And then I want you to, you know, so you know where you are today. So you can just start with, I'm not talking about getting to the root of it and solving whether it's coming from a true narrative. I just want you to start with acknowledging that you have a multitude of emotions and I don't want you to approach them as good or bad, negative or positive. I want you to just create this really non-judgmental, curiosity-based idea around them so that you have a chance to give them room to breathe. And as you do that, you can start sifting through, okay, this is based on an old, tired, untrue narrative that I need to retire and unlearn. It is not true that, you know, that is bad, you know, what, and guess what? Anger can be a great emotion to propel you to do the things you need to do. When it's a problem is when you keep stuffing it and not dealing with it, and it manifests itself in other ways in our bodies. Same thing with grief. People wanted to tell you all the time how long it's okay for you to be sad and how long, and everybody has their own process with this. And stuffing it, it's still going to come up. It does you no good. I found this out the hard way. It all came pouring out 6 years ago. And so it's like, women, we don't have to live like this. But we've gotten these narratives and scripts from the time we're little kids about how we're supposed to show up in the world and what is okay and what is not okay to feel. And then within all these circumstances, we've been told, oh, this is appropriate, this is not. I want you to throw out the word appropriate. I want you to just and start trusting yourself and what you're feeling inside. Give it room to breathe. Let yourself cry. Write it all down. Scream, yell, swear, burn it if you need to. Yeah. Take a pillow and swing it against the wall. I mean, I literally had so much anger stored up that my therapist was like, you got to release this. And I'm like, well, I do a really vigorous workout every day. She's like, I don't think that's going to be enough. So I want you to, you know, either go to, like, you can go to these rooms where you can swing things around.
The rage rooms.
Yeah, you can do that. Or, you know, at the time, this was during COVID, so there wasn't a lot of rage rooms open. I'm like, but I got a brick wall outside, although we probably needed them more than ever then. I've got a brick wall outside and I've got some old pillows, and and she's like, great, swing that pillow. And she's like, and yell and scream. And if there's somebody you need to say something to, pretend they're there and say it and let and release this and get it out of your body. And that was so prescriptive. It was just this whole like ability to finally let go of all this stuff, and the physical manifestation of it, of how much lighter I felt when I allowed myself to feel that. And when I started realizing the relationships in my life that were really for me and my wellness, and the relationships that preferred that I stay where I was before, because that just served and fit into their narrative better. And I had to make some hard decisions and set some boundaries that not everyone that received well. And I had to make some decisions for me, and my key decision every time. And I think sometimes we get ourselves in trouble with this. We think if there's pushback when we have communicated a boundary or communicated an expectation, that if they push back, it means we're wrong. I'm like, no, that does not mean you're wrong. Follow your intuition. They just may not be ready to hear it. And you may have to make some decisions about how much space they get in your life as you're working through this. You can't make them accept it, but this decision to continue to abandon yourself is not serving you. And it's not good for anybody else either. I mean, anyone we're in relationship with that is really going to receive our most authentic, healthiest selves, the way we want to be remembered by people, is they're going to show up and they're going to be there and they're going to be excited about being on that journey with you. Not everybody's ready to do that work and face those demons and make those changes. Many people are really comfortable being comfortable, and comfort and curiosity cannot coexist together for very long. And I chose to get curious, and it's the hardest, most important thing I've ever done for myself. For my relationships, I found out really who was with me. And it's not that it hasn't been hard, but it's been important, and I wouldn't change it at all. But I think I've just learned, like, so many women are going through these things and they're carrying these heavy burdens because they don't feel like they have a right to or deserve to. I'm like, no, you're worthy of all of it. You deserve to have space to be who you are, to feel what you need to feel, and be supported and honored within it. And I think that's just such an important part of what I've learned. And I want women to know this so much. And I want us to be kind to ourselves. And I want us to think about how we talk to ourselves when these hard things happen or when we're having a hard day. You know, you hit that anniversary and it's been 10 years and maybe it just hits you differently than it did the year before. And it catches you by surprise. That's okay. Give yourself room to breathe. Don't put a timeline on yourself of, oh, it hasn't felt that way for the last 6 or 7 years. I must be past it. No. Maybe you move forward from it, but there might be just different phases and seasons in life that bring those things and make them feel fresh again in a way that you weren't expecting. And give yourself the room and honor yourself in it. And so many times we're like, oh, can't believe my body's doing this to me, or I can't believe this has happened to me. And I'm like, look at it instead of an opportunity, like, okay, this is letting me know something needs to be moved through today. Maybe I need to take it a little easy on myself today. Maybe I need to give myself a little grace today. Is there something that's nudging me now that I didn't have the capacity to consider 10 years ago, but I've got more space for now? And really switch that. Anytime you catch yourself being judgmental, move to curiosity instead.
Yeah. And I think too, with that victim mentality, it's okay to be in that sometimes, because it is, life is fucking unfair, but it's also a very slippery slope, and you can stay in it if you're not careful. With my background and with how I grew up, I was just always jealous of everybody, like their relationships with their mom, their life, and you know, they weren't poor like me and all these things. And I just always felt like a victim. And it, it's like the worst. I feel like it's one of the worst feelings that I've ever felt or had to deal with. When you're talking about people, the people in your life, they want you to stay small because that's how they're used to you being. They don't want to be confronted with the fact that they have not changed or grown and are also refusing and not willing to do that. I have a hard time with that. When I go home, I feel very, very outsidery. I'm one of the few of our friend group that moved out of our, state, out of our city. And I realized how big the world is and how I didn't have to be that way anymore. Like, wow, people are actually changing. Like, I don't know about you, but like in high school, I mean, even in our TV and stuff, our movies, it's like when you see high schoolers and it's like, oh, you've changed. Like, it's terrible. Do you remember that? I spoke to somebody else.
Oh, yes.
No, I don't remember that. But no, like, you would come back and you've maybe it's the way you look. Maybe it's the way you are. Maybe it's you're doing something different. And they're just like, oh, she is different, or she's changed. Like, we can't be friends.
Yeah. They treat it like you think you're better than, and it's like, no, I've just learned and grown and evolved. I've lived all over the country. I lived in a tiny little logging town where a lot of people stay, and I and a few other friends left and went and did different things. And I tell you what, the best thing is, I get what you're saying about seeing how others live in the world, getting to other spaces and places, seeing that your story is not the only story, that there's a lot of different stories out there. There's a lot of different there's a lot of different ways you can show up and evolve and grow, and you don't have to stay stuck. I think sometimes when we live in that victim space and we view life as happening to us, we don't see our choices within it. We just see the reactive, especially if you've grown up around people that model that. You don't know anything else. And then all of a sudden you get outside of that. You're like, oh, wait a minute. I can make some choice. Yeah, this did happen, but I can make some choices within that I don't have to stay stuck here. Because you're absolutely right. I think it's always when people talk to me about, you're talking about feeling emotions and what, and I'm like, I'm talking about feeling and processing them. I'm talking about not stuffing them, feeling them, acknowledging them, naming them, moving them through and moving forward. I'm not saying now, sometimes, especially with grief, sometimes you just need to sit in it and feel like shit for a while. Totally. And that's okay. And give yourself the time to like, you know what? I am not ready to get off the mat yet. This was really crappy. And I'm going to allow myself to feel that. But at some point, there comes a point you get to make a decision for yourself. Okay. All right. It's time to get up off the mat. And with little steps, like maybe it just means you brush your hair today. Maybe it just means you brush your teeth. Maybe it just means you step outside on your front porch and take in a breath of fresh air. You don't, I'm not talking about getting up off the mat and heading out to work and all the responsibilities. And I mean, baby steps, be kind to yourself. That's the other thing. When I think we're going through something hard, we want ourselves, we have such high expectations of ourselves. Like do things when I'm working with, whenever I'm working with women, I'm like, we're going to start with something that feels really doable. We're going to get some wins and build your confidence. And as you do that and take your time and be really kind to yourself, then over time, you can take on bigger things and do more things and step into it more. But generous with yourself as you're pulling yourself off the mat. I mean, I think, and just really be, and think of, you know, I'm like, would you expect your sister, your girlfriend, your daughter, your, you know, your best friend, your coworker, your mother, your son, your partner, would you expect them to respond and react and recover in the way that you're asking yourself? 99% of the time, I was like, oh, absolutely not. Then why are you doing it to yourself? Why are you doing it to yourself? And I was, you know, we were having a conversation yesterday on a panel that we were recording, and it came to me through the panel of like, we need to remember as women that we don't have to live like we're an inconvenience to everyone. We are not an inconvenience to everyone. So don't live like you're an inconvenience to everyone. Even if you feel it, sometimes we feel inconvenient to ourselves. We're like, God damn, this is hard. But be really kind, really generous, really these are all things I have to do. Let me tell you, as much as I, you know, and the beautiful thing about this framework that I utilize is that I can go back to it as much as I need to, because I know that even with all the work I've done, and things are still going to come up. They're going to pull me back into some old narratives and habits that I'm going to have to snap myself out of and be like, oh, wait a minute, this framework that you share with everybody else now, you've started it for you. And it's still,
and you're not doing it, Melissa. That's what it tells you. Yeah. You're like, you're not following this today.
Yeah, exactly. And so it pulls you back into, reminds you, keeps you humble, keeps you back there real quick. But yeah, but you know, my big thing is like when you're going through these hard things, be really gentle, be really curious. I have found, because I can be as judgmental as anybody, if somebody irritates me or somebody's going down a road that I'm just diametrically opposed to in every way, I can get, I'm very opinionated and I can jump to judgment like that. And so what I've learned to do is snap into curiosity. Okay, get curious here. You may not agree with that approach or that response or what they said, but get curious about how maybe they got there. That doesn't mean you have to agree with it, but it keeps me out of that judgment and making assumptions and not being curious about people's stories. It also helps me to ask people, how do you need me to show up for you? Instead of assuming I know.
Absolutely. our I don't know, women are just inherently hard on themselves. But you know, it's like at this point it's ingrained in us, like our DNA, our generational patterns, like it has been passed down, not just it, you know, it's not just learned environmentally once we're a baby, you know, as we grow up. It's really ingrained.
It's in the womb. There's science now that shows it's in the womb.
Yes, and our mothers and their grandmothers and everything, like it's all connected. Our DNA strands, like it's the way we handle stress, the way that we process hormones, the like, it's literally, it's so hard, and it's really, really hard to be intentional. Because intentionality means that you're it's a constant process. So
yeah,
and you notice when you start ruminating, or you start having shitty thoughts again, and then you're like, God, I feel so bad. And you're like, Valen, why are you? Wait, no, I don't think that anymore. Like, it doesn't go away. The judgment. Oh my God, we're all judgmental. You know, we were raised that way. Like, not even raised. We were made that way because it's part of how we survived, by creating patterns and like determining if something was bad for us or not. So like, when we're judging people, the initial response is a survival instinct. But then after that, it's our responsibility and our choice to not go down that road. Because as women, I mean, it's very easy to judge other people. It's very easy to, I mean, I wouldn't say an aggressive driver. I'm a very good driver, but like, that is where my rage comes out. Like, that is the old, like, the judgment that I get from like people driving. I'm like, they gotta be old. They gotta be stupid. Like, they must like just be blind. They're just idiots. Like, I have all these thoughts that just run through your mind. But that's how it is. Like, that's just our brain. So then that intentionality of the awareness is like, okay, nope, that's not me anymore. That's the old me. That's, I don't like feeling that way. I don't like, you know, being mad at somebody because they stayed at the stop light too long when they could have turned right on red. Like, all of these things. And I'm like, Valen, it's not the end of the world. Like, at least, you know, maybe they're being extra safe. Maybe they were just in a car accident and they're scared. Maybe they're a new driver. Like, curiosity, bringing that curiosity into these everyday issues that we have, or we think are issues, but they're not. Humans are strange. We are so weird in the things that we get hooked up on. The other thing, what was it? It was about, gone.
I know that feeling so well.
It's so annoying and it's so funny, but at the same time, I'm like, okay, well, how about when, okay, so you have this framework that you utilize with your clients, with friends, with women, whatever. What is an actionable way of, I don't know, like, what's an everyday or a small action, you know, that women can take to be like, okay, today needs to be different. I'm feeling like crap. Yeah. Like, how do I get out of this? Where do I start?
Yeah. Yeah. So I have a one sheet thing, and I'm going to share it with you so you can put it in the show notes for this episode. Cool. And it's in our show notes, and I share it everywhere I go, whether I'm speaking on the podcast. It's the first thing I give women, and it's asking yourself these questions. Put it in a journal or a place you can see it, so you've got it to tap into, but identify 5 activities that nourish you. Identify 5 words on how you want to feel the next 6 months, and write down your character traits, who you are, not what you do, not your title, your role, but who you are. I'm energetic. I'm passionate. I'm hopeful. I'm stubborn. You know, put those things down. What those things are going to do is they're going to help you figure out what you value, what's important to you. Figure out activities you can do to fill your cup, to fill your resource. When you say, I hear all the time, people are like, I don't have room in my calendar. Everybody's got room in their car when they're driving the kiddos to school, or driving to work, or driving to the grocery store. What's one of those things that's on that list? Is it favorite music? Is it a podcast? Is it nothing? Is it just quiet? So, yeah. And so you wake up and you, and so then you've got that list to look at. What do I need today on these list of activities? It doesn't have to be five. It can be 20. I mean, on these list of activities that nourish me, what one of these do I need today? Which one of these resources am I going to pull from? On those five words on how I want to feel the next 6 months, how am I engaging in a way to make this possible? What are some steps I can take to make this, put this into action? And then it also is a great informer. Those two things are such great informers, along with your character traits, of looking at your calendar and being like, is anything in alignment here? Like, I've got, I, these things are resources that fill me. These character traits are who I am. These are five words on how I want to feel the next 6 months. Is there anything in my calendar or my relationships or my workspaces that reflect that? If not, it might be time to clean some house and to start setting some healthy boundaries around your time. Start saying no more than you say yes. In terms of one, like, if that list of three things sounds like too much, your one thing you're going to do this week, you're not saying yes to anything for at least 24 hours. When someone asks you something to do something, you're given 24 hours. You're going to go home and look at your calendar. You're going to think about whether you actually want to do it or not, because we as women feel like we have to say yes to everything. Yeah. And you're going to learn how to say no, or at least pause and be. And if you really want to do it, what's another thing in your calendar that you need to get rid of so that you can make space for that thing that is honoring, going back to that list I talked about earlier, of who you are as a person, what activities nourish you, what fills your cup, how you want to feel, and realize you've got choice in that. But yeah, if nothing else feels doable, you simply no yeses for 24 hours and maybe even just say no. It's like, no, not right now. No, period. No, yeah. Over explaining. No.
I love that because like most people women, like I go on Pinterest, I'm like, oh, look at this, you know, a checklist of, you know, the real you or the authentic you or the version of you that you want to be. And, you know, this million checklist thing, we don't ever do.
Yeah.
It. We download it. No. We take a picture of it, whatever, but it's not our words and it's not us. So writing it down, even if it's a note in your phone, like I use my note thing all the time, but then I'm also guilty.
Yeah.
So if you make the note, you know, putting it probably on your wallpaper, putting it some, you know, on your computer, putting it somewhere you can put more than one, like, because what I find that happens is that I have really good intentions for myself. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, maybe my kids distract me or something triggers me and then my emotions get out of whack and then I can't even think about something that would make me feel better. I'm just pissed at this point and I don't want to feel better. It's like, and it happens a lot and it's like constantly going back to like, okay, I don't want to do, and then our brains are like, I don't want to do anything that makes us feel bad. I want to do this. It's insane the way that our brains do that. Like, we know what will make us feel better. Look, we've made a list, but we can't bring ourselves to do it. It's insanity living in here.
It is. It is. And that's part of the thing too. One of the things I've started doing, and I do it almost every day, not every day, but almost every day, where I set aside 10 minutes of just quiet to let all the noise settle and calm down so I can actually get to what I actually need, what I actually want, just settle all the noise of just 10 minutes of quiet. It's usually somewhere outside if it's, you know, if the weather's nice, which I have pretty good weather here most of the year, luckily where I'm at now. But 10 minutes of quiet, but also just that remembering at the end of the day that if it requires you to abandon yourself, then it's got to be a no. If it requires you to abandon yourself, and that doesn't mean it's going to be easy, but I'll share that PDF with you so you can put it in the show notes, but it's a really great list to keep in front of you because it just gives you, because people are like, I don't know what to do for my self-care. What are five activities that nourish you? I don't know where I need healthy boundaries in my life. Well, what are five activities that nourish you? How do you describe yourself? And and how, what are five words and how you want to feel? Okay, if nothing, if they, look at your calendar now, what's out of alignment with that? Who's out of alignment with that? Sometimes we have to be really mindful of like, I could do this if I wasn't giving so much energy to that person, that relationship. And we think relationships have to be forever. And not relationships are for forever. Sometimes they're for a season. And if it's not life-giving, then you've got to take a look at what's happening there. And if you need to re-examine the time and energy given to that space. So yeah, those are bit, yeah, I think the biggest favor women can do themselves is just, you know, not automatically saying yes and learning to say no, period. I was the over explaining champion of the world for most of my life. Like my daughters, like mom, we got it. You don't have to keep, like, we got it. We hear you.
Drilling it in. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Because we feel like we have to justify everything we feel. We feel like we have to convince people instead of just trusting ourselves, like, this is how it is for me. This is what I have capacity for. If it doesn't work for you, that is yours to work out. That is not mine to work out. I'm honoring myself here. And of course and I think we're so worried about disappointing people, but we'll disappoint ourselves at the first notion. We're the first ones that we take out of our calendars when we're making room for things. And I tell women, I'm like, you put yourself in your calendar first and what you need that day, and everything else works around that. That does not get pushed out. Whether it's 5 minutes, 15 minutes, 50 minutes, 2 hours, whatever it is, whatever season of life you're in, that's in there every day. And everything else works out of that, because you're no good to anybody if you haven't first taken the time to be good to yourself. No one gets the best of you.
Yeah. Last question. I know we're getting to the time, but what are some examples, like subtle examples of ways that we abandon ourselves that women may not even realize that's what they're doing? Because a lot of times I feel like we do things but it's like, no, we have to do this. This is, they're not getting it, that they are abandoning this piece of themselves for this. Do you have any examples of like?
Oh yeah. And especially I think there's probably, the moms out there will definitely get this, but let's say this is something, a shift I had to make. I was staying up way later than I should have at one season of my life to make sure everybody's clothes were folded and put away. I was losing, probably, an hour of sleep on one end or the other. Yeah. That I was denying myself rest to make sure they had all their clothes folded and in their room. And it got to a certain point, I'm like, they're old enough to put their own clothes away. And so it became like, okay, new plan. Your clothes are going to be, I will separate them via your clothes, but there's going to be a laundry basket at the top of the stairs. At that point, two daughters were sleeping downstairs. The other one was on the main level with us. There's your basket. Take it downstairs. Put your clothes away. I will sort them and wash them. That's a little way. And we don't think about it, but I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm giving this time, I'm either doing this. Sometimes it was sleep. Sometimes it was, oh, nope, can't go for my run today. Got to get this done. Another way you might be abandoning yourself is if you're constantly rescuing your kids when they forget something at home. Your kids, they forget their uniform. They forget their lunch. And I rescued them for years until I had a point where I got a new job and it was much farther away from their school. It was like 40 minutes away from their school rather than like 5 minutes away. And I was like, all right, guys, you better remember everything. Dad works downtown. Mom works out in the valley. Nobody's going to be home to rescue you. If you forget it, then you forget it. And you're going to figure it out, whatever the consequence was. And I wasn't going to run myself ragged and move my schedule around, be late for work or leave work early, so that they weren't uncomfortable and it helped them learn responsibility. So those are a couple of examples at work, always being the person who plans the birthday parties and nobody helps you. My friends, Janelle Wells and Doreen McCauley, call it the invisible work. If you need help on that, ask for help. And if no one's willing to help you, just be like, I can't do this anymore. I'm having to stay later on Fridays because, and I, it was, you know, I took this on early on. It doesn't work for me anymore, or I thought people would help me or whatever, but also communicate when you need help. And there are people out there to help you, but those are examples of how we sacrifice our time, our energy, what we need, whether it's sleep or working out or getting home from work, that we willingly give away all the time trying to keep everybody else happy and make sure they're taken care of. Make sure you're taken care of.
Yeah. Perfect. No, those were perfect examples. Things that we are currently going through.
Yeah. I'm sure you're in the thick of it right now.
Callie forgot her gym uniform. And she's like, can you rent it up for me? Because we do. We normally do. And yeah. The other day, me and my husband have been talking. We're like, we got to stop making everything so easy for them. So we had it so hard that we've realized that we've been very easy. So now we have to like pull back and not make life so comfortable for their benefit to build that resilience, because resilience comes from struggle.
And the ability to make decisions and work out problems and believe that they can do it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's wild. Life.
I know. I know.
I'm so glad you were here today. Thank you so much for this conversation. There's so much more I'm sure we can talk about, so we may have to do it again. But thank you for everything.
You bet. Thanks for having me, Valen. I always love talking to you.
Yeah. Do you have, are you on Instagram? Do you want to share your handle or anything?
Yes.
So people can follow you for your podcast?
At Embracing Layers on Instagram. And that Instagram and LinkedIn are where you find at Embracing Layers on Instagram, the Embracing Layers Network on
LinkedIn.
We're also on Facebook and TikTok too, but those are the two prominent places. Embracinglayers.com is where you find everything that we do.
Perfect.
The podcast, how you can work with me one-on-one, my online course, have me as a speaker, all of our resources from all of our guests as well, our book, it's all there. All the places you can follow us. Just go to embracinglayers.com. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for being here.
You bet, Valen.
Thank you for listening to the Pregnancy, Loss, and Motherhood podcast. Thank you for spending time with me today. If you want more support, you can come hang out with me on Instagram at Evelyn James & Co. That's where all the real talk continues. This is where you will see everything that our company does and what we can help you with. And we want to start sharing your stories. And don't forget to visit our shop, evelynjames.shop. We're adding beautiful, intentional items every week for lost families and moms healing through motherhood. So until next time.